Sally?
I am here.
Oh, hi, Sally. It's Martha. Gotta get used to these mics.
Can you hear Tira?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
No, we, yeah. Well,
when she's on the phone, we can't hear her too well, but if you can turn it up a tiny bit, or we'll have her speak up. If
can you speak up, Sally?
Oh, yeah, I can hear. Thank you.
Oh, good. Okay, that's great. Okay, we have a small but valiant group who have joined our meeting. I apologize for, I guess I shouldn't apologize for the weather, but for the fact that we had so few dates and times available for the rest of us. Thank you, Sally, for calling in. We're going to be having some follow-up conference calls with other folks who could not attend to give them some chance to give us some feedback. So, my name is Martha Bedard. I'm co-chair and vice provost for libraries at the University of Connecticut.
I'm Kevin Corcoran. I'm also the co-chair, and I'm from the Connecticut Distance Learning Consortium.
I'm Pat Bannock from Eastern Connecticut State University, Director of Library Services.
And I'm Clara Obwa, Director of Library Services, Gateway Community College.
And Sally Reitz on the phone is...
I'm here.
Vice Provost for Academic Affairs for the University of Connecticut. So you can see, Sally, we're small and we're going to be very effective. So... did you all have a chance to look at the minutes? Did someone want to make a motion to approve?
So moved.
There were some omissions.
Okay. There were. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, yes. So.
Yeah,
yes, I didn't give you enough time.
Four.
Okay.
Where we have more discussion.
Yes.
Was held. I remember I suggested student survey.
Yes.
To which Dan then said there was a survey.
Said what?
Dan then said there was a survey that you guys conducted.
Yes, ours would not be for students, but
yes,
we could.
I would like, you know, the mention of a student survey. I said we needed that to capture the challenges and issues of them.
So, Marion, would you amend the minutes to indicate that Clara suggested that we do a student survey? So that's something that we'll consider. So we may do something similar to looking at what the public interest group, PIRG, did for students and perhaps adapted to Connecticut. So, but that's for... We'll make sure it's captured, Claire, in the minutes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other corrections, amendments? Okay. Now I'll call for approval, for a motion to approve.
I move to approve.
Okay. Huh? Any opposed? All right. The minutes are approved. So we'll move on quickly to the survey that was distributed to all of you. This particular survey is being conducted this month at the University of Connecticut. It's an adaptation of the Babson survey, which was done nationally. We worked with our Center for Excellence in Teaching and Learning in order to create something that might be a little bit more streamlined and work for the University of Connecticut. We did have to go through an IRB, an Institutional Review Board, because we were asking human people to answer it, even though we weren't touching human people. But So we will be conducting it. We'll have some results to share, which we might help us decide what to do statewide. But in the meantime, I would like to call for any comments, suggestions, revisions, something that any of you might like to see in a survey that we may do statewide.
since I don't have the numbers, I'm sorry. It's the question on how would you rate the ease of searching for educational resources for your courses?
Was that the one?
Yeah, it's towards the end. Actually, I'm trying to determine if that's the one I really want to query about. No, maybe that one is okay. Is there somewhere in here, since I've only looked it over twice and haven't memorized it yet, where you allude to the lack of supporting materials, the PowerPoints and the quizzes, which seem to be an issue for faculty in asking them what some of the hurdles are?
Not specifically. Go ahead.
One of the top three barriers.
Exactly. That's
okay.
where I am.
Is it in that section there?
But that would be a very good addition to that section, where we do, you know, sort of give them 13 choices. So I think that's a great idea. Lack of supplementary.
Yeah.
And by supplemental materials, what you mean are, I'm assuming, homework assignments,
right?
Grading,
yeah, PowerPoints perhaps, or quizzes, or the materials that you often find with a commercial textbook, the bundled materials that help the faculty member to deliver the course.
Okay, so I think that's an excellent addition, and I think it may be too late for us because it might have to go back through OER, but if I can add it before we send it out next week, I will.
Going back to IRB would not be a good option.
No, and I don't know the answer to this. Maybe Sally, in your experience, you know. If UConn has received IRB approval in order to administer the survey, and then we want to do it statewide, do you think that would suffice for the other institutions in the state?
Usually you link to, you indicate that IRB approval has been granted by a particular institution, and the other IRBs review it, and almost always, if it's, you know, it's granted, it's grandfathered in. Remember that IRB exemptions occur when you're not going to use the data, you know, that's anonymous. You're not going to use the data for an article, and you're using it for institutional improvement or institutional knowledge to make things better for your students. You're almost always exempted from IRB on that situation.
So what we would, I think that the next speaker who will be, Kevin will be introducing, will be coming on the phone, will talk to us about how they used the survey, and that's my understanding. And so there may be some things that we have to be aware of in terms of IRB. Now, it would be interesting to be able to do an article, but I'll have to go check back with our folks and see whether they asked that question, because I think we're going to learn
something.
That's
only a published article if you're going to use it in research. So we're okay. I mean, writing an article for the newspaper, writing an article about our efforts together, that would be fine. But it's published research that would be, you know, that you'd have to get IRB approval for. We're not doing that.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you. So that's good news. We shouldn't have a problem. And some of the institutions who are not research intensive perhaps don't go through institutional review board. I'm looking at Clara for the community colleges. I don't know if you tend to have to go through an institutional review board. You do?
Yeah, we do.
All right, so everybody does. Okay. Well, hopefully they rely on us.
Yeah.
Other suggestions, Clara? You look like you have something you want to say.
I'm wondering whether it would be good to ask a question. Have you ever heard about the state of Connecticut, the special act that was passed? Whether they have ever heard about it.
Okay.
Because it's informational.
Okay.
They are aware of it. And then we insert the link.
Okay.
To
so that they see it too if they have never seen it.
So that's good. So and we could make it even broader in terms of they are aware of federal requirements and are they aware of state requirements.
Exactly.
And we could have a link to both the federal requirements and the state requirements. And that just gives us an opportunity when we ask them if they're aware to then make them aware. In fact, a lot of this survey is meant to be baseline but also serve for some awareness building.
Yes. On first page, the first page where you have the graduate level, undergraduate level,
yes,
and other,
yes,
will it be good to include community colleges, maybe say associates or,
yes,
you know,
that'll be very good for a statewide effort.
Statewide effort.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you. Okay. Kevin, you took some feedback from Dan Barrett. Would you happen to have that handy? He reviewed it since he couldn't come and sent us a note. I could pull it up, I think, if you can.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, he was interested in getting a copy of what North Dakota used as a modified one, and Tanya will be talking to us in a little bit about that. But I believe the second question was regarding the level of support that they had at their individual institutions as far as library, IT, dean's office, teaching resource center, and just generally speaking, what type of supporting cast did they have for faculty to be adopters?
Those seem like reasonable questions to add to it. You know, we may find that institutions with a strong support have more awareness in institutions. That could even be not quite demographic, but someplace at the beginning there about what kinds of support you have. So.
Martha, on some of these questions where the last choice is other,
yeah.
Is it feasible to add a box that says specify? Because I know that on one of them you have any other factor and you have a box. But on the question on who has a role in selecting,
yeah,
or recommending, you say other. And okay, then who has a primary role and you say other. And I'm wondering if you would
specify the other.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you think it's not going to make it too complicated, I'm just...
Well, let's just... That makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Well, and so certainly for administering this to the rest of the state, it does.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that we might not be anticipating who some of these others might be, and giving them a chance to specify that might give us some more information.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There are two other questions. I'm wondering why we have the questions on page 2. I don't know them. Who has a role in selecting or recommending educational resources?
Yeah.
And then the other question, who has the primary role in selecting educational resources? And they have the same...
So in some ways they seem replicative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for our purposes, it is just the chair. You know, what kind of a role does a chair have? What kind of a role does the the course instructor have? What kind of the dean?
I think the first question is more about who has any kind of a role, and then the second one is who's the primary. And then we might get some information out of that, do you think?
Yeah.
Especially in recommending, because let's say the Center for Excellence in Teaching and Learning is helping a faculty member construct,
yeah,
a course. You know, what we're hoping is that they will play a role in guiding them towards OER, or if they consult their faculty for reserve kinds of materials, that they'll have a role. But at the end of the day, who makes the decision is really, I think, the differentiator.
You also have one kind of leftover question here, which I've now lost, which says, should we keep this one?
Oh.
Are you keeping it?
I can't remember. I'll have to send a note to Kathy.
It's the first one, I think. How often have you used the following formats or tools? And then it says, should we keep this one?
Sorry, I wish I had checked on that one.
That's all right.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We had so many versions.
I'm sure.
I'm apologizing if you got the wrong version.
That's okay.
Because your version didn't have the question numbers and mine does, so... We had a very good committee that worked on this, and as I said, they worked on it with our instructional design folks.
Now I'm really eager to have it, you know, made available because you've done all the, you know, the hard part.
So, you know, perhaps Kevin and I can take back your feedback and any other feedback that we get once we solicit it a little more aggressively from the rest of the members and put together a revision, and after we've spoken with the North Dakota folks. So we're just about ready for you to call your colleague, unless there are any other comments while Kevin is making the call.
A little early, maybe they will be late.
Oh, 5 minutes, yeah.
I was just trying to ask if I'm sorry if I tell her.
Well, anybody see any downside in trying to send a survey? Or, I mean, logistically, it will be difficult.
Well, I think the survey in and of itself is a consciousness raising
right.
tool.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Well,
I can do it right here. It's probably it's going to be mostly one way. She's going to be talking.
Oh, we could hold it for that mic, and then we could mic it. Is that
sure? Let me just
get our things right.
Well, I'll just email it to everybody.
So while we're getting that ready, I thought I'd make a couple of announcements. So we've been working on the Open Chemistry textbook. We have we will have the new version of the OpenStax Adams first textbook that has been written by a group of faculty at UConn ready by mid-May, and we also have agreement by the entire chemistry department to use the OpenStax textbook. Some will use the one that exists right now, and others will be using the revised version depending upon their teaching method. This includes the regional, so we will have well over 1,000 students next semester who will be adopting what was a very expensive chemistry textbook, I think close to $400. So, Sally, isn't that great?
Oh, that's wonderful.
So the fact that we got an entire department, you know how difficult that is to agree to use an open source book. We will get a lot of good data out of this. What happened was some of the faculty members used a commercial text, but they sort of parallel taught with the open one that was available from OpenStax, so they had some data, and once the department reviewed the data, went forward with adopting that. So an entire department at UConn is rather astonishing. And very good news.
Especially a very expensive type of textbook like that.
Right, and it's a three-semester, so it serves three semesters, so a lot of students, and the regional campuses.
Did you say that UConn faculty had also contributed a chemistry textbook?
One of the barriers to complete adoption was that the textbook was... didn't teach according to what's called Adams First. So there's a particular methodology that's used by about 10% of the large research institutions in the country, so there was a barrier in using this particular one. And so a lot of the content didn't have to be changed. What had to happen was the approach and, you know, sort of all the chapters had to be redone, the tables redone, and so on. So it wasn't a complete rewrite. And the faculty members at UConn did it free out of the, just because it's the right thing. The cost was in the sort of the editing piece, you know, redoing the book itself, changing the chapters and the format, and that was about $20,000, and the student government voted to pay for it, knowing that if this was adopted, I'll finish there. Now we have Tanya. Okay.
Sure. So this is Tanya.
Oh, perfect.
Great.
Wow. So, Tanya, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Glad to be here.
We've been having an interesting conversation about adapting the Babson survey for use in Connecticut, as we've had only just our second OER task force meeting today. One of the main takeaways from our first meeting was doing some type of baseline survey across the state. And I had mentioned the efforts that you had done in North Dakota and the data that you had collected by adapting the Babson survey for your own use. So we're very excited to hear about your story, your path, you know, how you modified the survey, how did you get acceptance, but more so, once you got the data, what did you do with it?
Okay. So hi, everybody. I don't know if you know very much about me, but I work at the system office in North Dakota. It's the coordinating board or commission or whatever. There's lots of different names for this unit in other states. We have all of the institutions in North Dakota are under one system, so that means our research four-year and two-year institutions that are publicly funded work with this office and with each other. So in 2013, and my title is Distance Education Director and State Authorization, so I serve as the, we have a very small staff here, I would say, and we all do a lot of different things. My title doesn't really encompass all that I do. I report directly to the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, and so there's only three of us that are directors in the office. And we're all on the academic team. My specialty is in distance education just because of my dissertation background and research, and I do work really closely with that area, but I also am pulled into a whole host of other projects that come through the office, including, you know, being at the Provost Academic Affairs Council meetings, all academic program review, presenting at the board and the legislature and working with campuses on different projects. So anyway, if that just gives you kind of an idea that the position that I have is multifaceted. In 2013, we had a legislative request come through asking that the university system look at the use of more open educational, actually at the time they just were interested in open textbooks, because that was the trend that was out there at that moment. Remember when, who did it first? The name is escaping me right now, but they launched free textbooks, and now they're at a business model where you have to pay, but, you know, everybody was interested in all these free textbooks. So because I was a doctoral student, finishing my dissertation, and nobody else wanted to deal with this, they gave it to me, and I just fell in love with the project. So I started working on this back in 2013, just figuring out what it was, what would be a best course of action, how we could coordinate among all of the institutions, the delicacies of academic freedom and tenure and the bookstores and pricing, and I mean, there's just so many different realms. And in 2014, during the interim, and 15, I was asked to come back and present at the legislative interim meeting. And at the time, I mean, this was really still pretty new, and I just said, I used a quote from the song Imagine. You might say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. And I remember the legislators just laughing, and they kind of like stopped in their tracks, and then they funded it. So in the last session, we had major budget cuts throughout the state, and this project stayed in the governor's funding budget. It stayed in, went through all of the House and Senate, and passed through the larger assembly. And so I don't have a huge budget, but I have enough to do something really great and show some great return on investment. So what my legislators are really interested in is reducing the cost of education for students, and I'm sure that's where you all are starting with. How do you show gains on something like this? And I really wanted to use a lot of data, and I love Jeff Stevens' work with Babson. I used a lot of it, you know, with his online surveys when I was doing my dissertation. So when that 2013 report came out, you know, opening the nation, at the bottom of that survey report is just this little email address, and it says, if you'd like to know more about this survey, you can send me an email. And I thought, well, what the hell, why not? I'll just send him an email. So I emailed him, and, you know, just as like a nobody, and Jeff is somebody that I would call probably my research, you know, hero, and just said, I'm developing a survey for the youth in North Dakota because I need a baseline. I like your survey a lot. Can you take a look at mine? And I just kind of put in there, if you think mine isn't good, do you mind if I use yours? Just kind of hoping, you know. And about 6 o'clock that night, I got an email from Jeff Seaman, and I just about fell off my chair. So, I mean, the collaboration with him is really nice. He's just very easy to work with. I found it wasn't, he definitely didn't do the work for me. I did it myself. The nice thing about working with him is that he already had, you know, this national comparative data set. So what we did was his national data set includes all sectors of higher education, including for-profit and private and everyone. And so what he did was select only the public institutions at the national level, and then we compared his national public data with my state public data. Let's see, what else did I say? I did ask faculty to identify which campus they're from, because I wanted to know which campuses were using open resources, and we're more aware of it, and, you know, where each campus sort of was. Other than that, I didn't adjust the survey a whole lot, just because I really wanted to do a nice comparison between my state and the national public data. I would say that the one thing on that survey that's lacking, and I don't have a fast answer for you, and you're going to have to find this among yourselves, is a cost analysis baseline. So what I got from the OER survey with Babson is where my faculty are at. You know that the faculty, that without the faculty in this, you can't do anything with open resources. You have to have faculty buy-in. You have to have faculty champions. That, you know, they're not all going to love it, but the ones that do are going to be the ones you have to empower and work with. So, you know, that was an important thing. I wanted to show gains. Hopefully, at the end of this project, I can show that the faculty are using it more and more aware and more open to it. Some of the things that I found in the survey were really shocking to me. I discovered that the faculty in North Dakota don't really understand. They've heard the term OER, but they really don't know what that means. They're very unaware of licensing and copyright rules and restrictions. I think that they're kind of all assuming that they're under the protection of, you know, like academic protections, and then if they do get caught using something out of bounds, that they're just going to say, oh, sorry about that, I'll take it out of my class or whatever. And that is probably indicative of my state. It's sort of the Wild West, and people kind of do what they want. And the other thing that I found on my in this high-level survey results was that North Dakota faculty enjoy a lot more autonomy in choosing their resources than most states do. Compared to the national publics, North Dakota faculty at every level, including the 2 years, get to select the materials that they want for their courses, and that to me was really encouraging because if my faculty have the choice to use an open resource or something that their department chair chose, they get to choose it themselves, and so that was encouraging because I know that my faculty are empowered to select these materials within the structure of the institution. So I'll stop and let you ask me some questions. How about that? And then maybe we'll go from there.
Perfect. I mean, the one question I have is, so you were able to compare the national data set against North Dakota. Did you go beyond that? Did you compare how North Dakota rated versus sister states to sort of get a regional perspective?
No, nobody has state data yet.
Okay. That's right. You were the pioneer.
Right. So mine's the first state data set that's been compared to the national.
So if we conduct
one. If you do this, then you can compare to mine.
Yeah, that's right.
Perfect.
Exactly. Well, so we also will be using an adaptation.
Can you do you mind all just kind of moving closer to the phone so I can hear you?
Is that what I have to do?
Yeah,
oh.
I think that's
the thing. Oh.
Thank you.
So we'll be using an adaptation of BEFS, and although many of the questions are the same and can be, you know, we'll be able to compare. Did you find that as an issue for you? You said you added some, or you just changed them, but you kept it mostly the same?
The only thing I added to the survey was I wanted my institutions to identify what institution that they were from.
Yeah, right.
And I think we added on departments, like what department do you teach for?
Right.
We added, are you a workforce development instructor? Because there's a lot of, like, career and tech ed courses
right.
that are taught at our two-year institutions, such as, like, they have, like, engine repair for Massey Ferguson trucks, right?
Oh.
So that wouldn't fit into any of the classical academic categories like
right.
social sciences or what have you. As a researcher, if you plan to do a true comparison between, or I should say among, your data set, my data set, and Jeff's data set, you need to be sure that the the way your data is entered into SPSS is the same as how he did it with mine.
Okay.
Yes.
So I think we'll...
I wouldn't... As far as that goes, what I did was I collected... So I sent out like 5,000 surveys, all 6,000 surveys or something like that, to faculty in North Dakota. And then that all came back in Qualtrics software. I don't know if you guys have that Qualtrics survey software. It's
yes,
pretty common.
Yes.
And then
that's what we want.
You can actually just import his survey into Qualtrics, and it's his survey is an open resource itself, and he'll share it with you.
Great.
Secondly, I took all the data from that and gave it to him, because if he's willing to, he ran the data through SPSS with the exact same parameters that he used on the national data. Because what you don't want to do is end up with charts and graphs and comparisons and analysis that's, I mean, you can do all kinds of things to manipulate data. So I wanted that as standardized as I could possibly get it, and that's why I said, you know, he already has it all set up. So he just ran my data with the same context that he ran the national data.
Okay. Thank you. That's very good. Our primary purpose is, of course, to collect it for Connecticut to see where we are, to see where the gaps are, but I think it would be useful and interesting to compare it to where we are nationally. Pat, you have a question? You have to come back.
Yeah. Hi, Tanya. I'm Pat Bannock from Eastern Connecticut State. I had a question about where you said that your faculty have a lot of autonomy in selecting their textbooks, if I got that right. And you felt that that was a good opportunity, which it could be, but I'm wondering if you found any cases where there might be junior faculty that would be interested in using OER, but or the senior faculty might want to exercise some control over that.
Of course, yes.
I think Sally's
Yeah, I'm just saying I can't hear any of the questions. Sorry.
Sorry.
Yes, this is Pat Bannock. The question was where you said that you found that your faculty, even your junior faculty, had a lot of autonomy in choosing their textbooks, which could be a good thing, which would allow people that were interested in making an OER choice make that choice. But did you find any cases where you felt that there were senior faculty that were kind of exercising pressure to go with the standard textbook?
I'm sure that that's happening. There's going to be a scale of gradation of people who are ready to move on this and who are not. One of the things that you're going to see if you look at my survey and the national survey data is that more often it's actually the 50-year-old faculty, and I'm using that number broadly, you know, older faculty, 35 to 50-ish years old, who are more open to trying new things than the young ones. So that surprised me.
That's probably because they've got tenure already and they can afford to try new things.
Well, they're real comfortable with themselves. They've already done this for a while. They know their subject. They're not tied to a book. It's just this whole comfort level where when you're a new teacher, you're like, oh, gosh, give me a book so I can do this right. But, that varies based on person to person. My approach, so I don't know how your approach is on this. If you're able to, as, you know, provost, go back to your institution and say, all right, everybody, listen up. We're going open resources, and this is going to happen by fall.
That's not going to happen here. That is not going to happen
either,
here.
You're on the bus or you're off the bus.
Oh, okay, so Sally.
There's that.
No, I don't think so.
That's, you know, that's UMUC right now that did that. You know, 60,000 courses.
Yeah.
We're all going open resources, which, I mean, God bless them. Good for them,
yeah.
Right? It's the big experiment. That is not my reality. My reality is that they have to love me, right? They have to trust me. They have to want to. And I have to be able to talk to them and make them very comfortable with this so that they feel like they thought of it themselves, right?
Right.
Like, right?
Right.
So That's my leadership style is like, hey, you're really, really smart faculty, and you know way more than I do about your topic. So how about if y'all get together with me, and I'll show you these books that are free and open. Students like them. You can adapt them. You can adopt them. You can chop them up and use them how you want. You can integrate your own resources. You got all this freedom to do what you want. Because, you know, at the end of the day, faculty love the idea of being the bosses of themselves and their classroom. I mean, I was a faculty member. I loved that freedom. And so that's my approach to it is, my approach is that if you don't like this, great. I'm fine with that. You don't have to, but somebody else will. And so maybe you'll come back in a year or 3 years or next month. I mean, forcing them or making it a rule is just going to make them revolt. And so I've had a lot more buy-in by letting them think that it's their idea.
Well, I certainly think that's the reality here. I had one other more technical question. When you talked about adapting the survey instrument very minimally so that you could do a direct comparison to the national data set that Babson has created. And so I'm wondering if as we consider what we're going to do here, whether some of the things that we wanted to change slightly would make it hard to compare the results, and whether it would be easier to do that if we had a little supplemental section. I'm just wondering about the process.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would probably recommend you add a question or two rather than change the questions, because then now you're not comparing anything to what was already done if you change it.
Yeah, I guess it's not changing the question so much as adding another possible answer. I'm wondering how that might cause.
So give me a specific.
Well, one of the issues where we were talking about the hurdles in using OER, we didn't see anything on the tool about the lack of supplemental materials like PowerPoints, quizzes, homework assignments. Did you have that in there? And because we wanted to add something like that.
Oh, I mean, I think that that's already encompassed in just lack of materials or not knowing where to go or...
Okay.
That there's not enough in my subject area. Isn't there an answer like that? I'm not looking at the survey right now, but...
I don't have it in front of me either.
There's something that there just says there's not a lot out there or something like that.
Okay, thank you.
So those specific materials would be included in that, I think.
Hi, Tonya. This is Clara. My question is on the development of the survey instrument. From your research, was it tested, either Babson or yours, tested for reliability and validity?
Oh, the original survey instrument is Babson's survey, and they're one of the leading educational research survey groups in the nation, so he did all the testing. I didn't do that.
Okay. Is there a report?
It's his instrument.
Okay. Is there a report for that? For the test?
For testing the validity?
Yes.
You could talk to Jeff Seaman about that.
Tanya, thank you so much. If you've still got time, a couple more questions. One of the burning questions I have is, you know, once you have the data to really compare North Dakota against the nation, you know, outside of basically identifying some maybe training needs or awareness building, how else did you use the data to push North Dakota ahead in the OER adoption?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know if this... okay, so here's what I think this did for me as the leader of this project. It gave me personally a measure of respect that the project itself had a baseline data set, that it was comparable to national data, that I was collaborating with a nationally respected researcher. That alone gave folks like faculty who are, you know, I mean, respected faculty at research institutions confidence that I wasn't just some ding-dong up at the Capitol trying to get them to do something. It just gave it a lot more respect for the project, I think. They liked seeing that I had done my homework. Moving the project along, I think if I were to say something that would add... add something to this survey. If I were you, I would also look at how you're going to determine what your students currently spend on textbooks. That has been just a huge, contentious conversation. I mean, I know that, like, you could go with the national number that's produced by, like Spark, you know, says $1,100 a year, and I think that there's a more recent number that just came out that students are actually spending more, like $1,300. But it's really, really difficult to get actual numbers from your students because the bookstore might, you know, the instructor might offer a book, and new, the book costs $268. Used, it costs $168. It's $230 on Amazon. But if you know, it's really difficult to get a really solid number of what students are actually spending. You could look at, there's some reports out there that other states have done where they actually surveyed students and asked what they spent. That may or may not be that accurate. I don't know if students always can calculate exactly what they spent on their textbooks. What we're finding is that students sometimes just don't buy the textbook, and then they just go to class without it and try to, like, borrow notes or read off their friends or go to the library. And so perhaps a number that's really low, like if the student number comes out and says, I don't spend any money on textbooks, right? That's maybe not a good thing, because what it means is that student, I mean, you know, a legislator would say, hooray, low cost for students, but the reality is the student doesn't have any books and she's not learning anything or she's falling behind, right? So I think what my legislators want to know is they want to know that we're reducing the cost of textbooks. And so what I decided to do in North Dakota, rather than trying to find out what everybody is spending on textbooks and what we're charging for textbooks, is pilot studies.
Yeah.
Right. So certain institutions are doing pilot studies with, say, you know, 10 faculty in 10 high enrollment courses in the 1 and 2 year levels. Students used to spend $200 a textbook. Now the textbook is zero. Yeah. And I can say definitively at the end of this project, this is how much I save students at this particular pilot study.
Yeah.
And then hopefully we can apply that, you know, in a larger context or use that to involve others in it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
So is there a system office-wide effort to support faculty adoption, or is this... you've been tasked with carrying the whole load, and you're doing it sort of, you know, guerrilla warfare style.
All right. So, again, I'm really not interested in, like, trying to control this thing forever. Like, I have other interests in my life. I love open resources, but it's untenable to imagine that one person, because I don't have a support staff, and I don't have, I mean, I've got other things that I have to do, could manage the entire state. So instead, I've empowered leaders at the institutions to become the people who will lead it for their institution. And the more I say that to them, the more they do and the better they do. So that's my approach.
Great. Before we wrap up, I just wanted to make sure, Sally, if you're still on the line, did you have any questions for Tanya? Nope. That's okay.
By the way, my fee for this session is $10,000, and you can make the check payable to my vacation fund. Just kidding. But this has just been like a grand experiment, and the whole way has been just like how I think that people will come along with me, and it's working. You know, I know all the ways that things don't work. And then I just tried to do the exact opposite of that.
Well, like I mentioned, when we talked last, you know, it was impressive to see that you had adopted the Babson survey, and, you know, we're trying to follow in your footsteps to some degree. So is there anything that we can do to help? We'd love to stay in touch. We'd love to be able to share comparable data if we can. But is there anything that you would like from us as we move forward?
Here's one thing I would strongly, strongly, strongly suggest. Don't get in the business of producing and housing open resources. Don't make that your priority on this. Your priority should be the adoption and use of open resources. That's not to say that you won't have a rock star faculty member who writes an open textbook. You probably will. But there are repositories nationally that are doing this already. Hewlett's funding production. Rice OpenStax is spending $500,000 on new textbooks, each textbook. You don't need to get in the business of producing textbooks. They're out there. What now has to happen is a very concerted effort to encourage the use and adoption of free resources that are already out there, and faculty need help knowing where to go and what to do, and they might need support as they need instructional design to redo their courses. They might need some sort of, maybe they don't have to teach a course or you so that they can redesign one, or they get a stipend in the summer to redo it, or you make this part of the 10-year process. But my suggestion would be not to get in the business of, like, creating a whole new warehouse of stuff, because it's just unmanageable.
I think it was Cable likes to throw out the number that there's a 500 million assets out there globally in the OER repositories worldwide. So there's
yeah, we don't really need more, yeah. Right? We just need to, like, actually use them.
Right. Absolutely right.
People are going to ask you about what about the bookstore. Everybody loves to ask that question. Well, what about the bookstore? Mm-hmm. And you need to have an answer for that, because you're gonna look like big bad wolves to the bookstores. And what I say is, there used to be a Circuit City, and that is no longer. There used to be 3 different bookstores in my town that no longer exist. People shop for their cheese on Amazon. It's just the way things are going, and this would happen if I were standing here or not. My mission is not to fund the bookstore. My mission is to reduce the cost for students and to improve their academic performance. So they're just going to have to figure out a new business model. That's not my business. So, but I'm not anti-bookstore. I'm just not, like, it's not my business. That's not what I'm here for.
Absolutely right. It's about student success.
Right.
Tanya, thank you so much for taking time out today to talk with us. I think this was very, very helpful for us, you know, specifically as we're trying to get in position to do a statewide survey. So your perspective is very valuable, and I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Good luck, you everybody. I think you're on the right track. I think if my best advice would be, this is not easy. You're going to have times when people don't like you. You're going to have a lot of people who tell you why this is a stupid idea and it's going to go away. And they'll think that if they just sit around long enough, you'll quit. And my advice is just don't quit. Just keep doing it.
Just keep swimming, as somebody once said.
Just keep going, yep.
Well, thank you again, and I'll follow up with you shortly.
Sure.
All right. Thank you so much.
Have a good day. Bye.
All right. Take care.
Well, thanks, Kevin, for arranging that. I think we've got some good ideas. I just heard from Kathy Labrador that our survey's been sitting in IRB for the past 3 weeks, so maybe there's time to change it if they haven't even opened it. So, she's looking into it because the questions and suggestions that you've made are quite minor. So we'll see. It was based highly, heavily on the Seaman survey from the Babson Group. Yeah. So I think next, Kevin is going to talk about the OER inventory.
Sure.
You want to do that? Yeah?
Okay. It was probably a little bit too cumbersome to actually print out the spreadsheet, but I did distribute through email an Excel document that was developed in concert with the Northeast OER Consortium. And just to sort of revisit that group, it's a loose affiliation of institutions throughout the Northeast that have banded together for a common goal. So there are institutions represented from the state of Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York, and New Hampshire, and eventually, or shortly, it will be Rhode Island. And what we were trying to do was create a data collection vehicle that could be adopted, and that the regional data would help spur cross-institutional, cross-state collaboration. So if we could actually see that there was faculty members developing something in a specific discipline at one state, that other interested faculty could connect with them and see either how they could work on something in concert together, or if they could actually modify what they've already done. So in some form or fashion, we've started using this across the state in trial form. So we've collected some data from Housatonic Community College, Tungsis Community College, Charter Oak State College, just to sort of test out the look and feel. The Excel spreadsheet has two main tabs to it. One is a straight quantitative capture. So what is the institution? What is the course? What is the legacy resource? So there is some assumptions in this spreadsheet. So what is the legacy resource that's being replaced? What was the cost of that legacy resource? What is the replacement OER resource? What's the net savings? What's the number of students enrolled in the course and complete the course? And overall, what's the net savings? So that one quantitative tab is really specific to net savings or student affordability. There's a secondary tab that's more about qualitative. So it's the ability for faculty to put observations or shared research data on student performance. So were they able to capture data around student performance with the legacy resource versus the adopted OER piece? And so far, the only data that we've been able to capture to some extent that's not in this document as of yet is data that Housatonic Community College had done. So what my hope would be is that we would be able to look at this Excel document as a potential data collection and revise it to meet the needs statewide if we think it's a good start. So with that, I'll stop and see if there's any questions, and I'd be happy to answer questions on how we got here.
So essentially, what you're trying to do is determine what open educational resources are being used and by whom, and what was, I'm just reframing so I can understand it, and what was the cost of the one that was being used before, and if there are any measures of success, such as the one that I saw that, you know, there were more B's in the class than C's or something like that. Sally, are you still on the line?
I am, but I'm having problems hearing some of it.
I'm sorry. I was just wondering if you'd had a chance to look at that inventory, or if you thought that we would be able at, you know, I'm using the example of UConn to send out such an inventory to our faculty to ask them.
I would distribute it by or have department heads distribute it. You know, obviously, it would be voluntary.
Right.
Now, we have 1,600 full-time faculty, so it's as you know, it's challenging. But we could do a random sample, or we could do a random selection distributed across departments too, and that might get us a slightly higher response rate.
Okay, so in some way, you know, the questions are. I mean, I tried to get some things, you know, from the bookstore at one point in time, and did get a little bit of information about which classes had gone OER and what the cost savings were, but it's so random. And then, interesting, and just anecdotally, talking to faculty, many of them they don't use what we might call OER, but they're actually cobbling together a set of resources based upon things that they have found for free on YouTube, or that they put together themselves, or a licensed library resource. So, in other words, it's free to the student. So, you know, I think there's some value in trying to get a, you know, so we've got this one Babson survey, which is more awareness, but then another one which would be very specific, because we ask no specific questions about what you're using. So, it'd be hard to do statewide, but it might be worth it.
One of the issues that I think is similar at Eastern is I think that faculty are, some are using OER, but didn't really know they were using OER in that definition until I sent out the question, which is a very, you know, unscientific kind of question. Tell me if you're using OER, because we'd like to have a luncheon and we'd like to have you discuss how you're using them with your colleagues. So it's a little bit difficult to get such nice data as you have at some places like at Housatonic, where you have a nice, neat, you know, textbook, OER textbook to commercial textbook comparison. I'm wondering, in addition to that, whether there'd be any value in collecting some data on efforts to increase OER awareness, because in some cases, that's really where you have to start.
I think it's a great idea to sort of chronicle what OER efforts around awareness have done. So, you know, I know that Eastern's done something. Tunxus is represented in the room, and I know they have a Going Open committee that has facilitated a number of events. Just to be transparent about this, there are some challenges. I don't want to say defects, but there are some challenges with this data collection vehicle or any data collection vehicle. This assumes that there's a legacy resource to be replaced. When a course is being designed as affordable from the beginning, there isn't a legacy piece to do a net cost savings. I guess you could say that the faculty member evaluated this particular resource and chose this, that there's a cost avoidance, but it's not necessarily a cost savings. At the same time, as you have different course providers out there, like somebody like Straighter Line, edX, or what have you, where you can now take those courses free of charge and then do some type of assessment and credit and some credit adoption, is that considered student affordability? It's not necessarily OER, but it's still a cost avoidance piece for a student versus tuition. So there are challenges, especially when we're talking across the Northeast with different education models at different institutions, and how do we accomplish this? We kind of had, I guess, an understanding that if it didn't fit into a straight quantitative one, the narrative collection still had a way of collecting efforts. But maybe there's a third tab to Pat's point of saying what type of OER awareness campaigns have you done on campus?
I think that might create just some examples of what people are doing that might encourage other people to do more things and increase the number of, you know, people who might be willing to come and speak about this at various institutions across the state. So if we knew that, you know, like you have this great affordable textbooks event coming up at UConn. You know, it's nice to know that this is happening.
So I don't know if there's any decision here, or we're just going to discuss it again at. Glad you could make it.
Just finishing up on the data collection vehicle. What we can do is, if folks have the time to do this, to take a deeper dive, maybe have other folks in their institution take a look at it, maybe even faculty, to see how it may fit, what barriers there may be, and come back. If we can start collecting data, that's great. If it works, if there's modifications that need to be made, we can also do that. So,
yeah, I'm just wondering if you could have another tab for, you know, general efforts in this regard, because people may be deterred by the fact that, well, I don't have anything really specific that I can plug into the tabs you've got. But if you had OER awareness efforts on your campus, then maybe, you know, quite a few more campuses could feel like, yes, I could answer this. I did do a, you know, workshop. I brought somebody in. I had a luncheon, so that, you know, we would show that
something is happening and not limit ourselves just to the few that are actually substituting one kind of thing for the other.
I think it's a great idea. I'm going to add that in here, and I think it will help us when we eventually do our summary report for the state that if we can chronicle what efforts are happening on campus, not necessarily adoption.
I think that's really important because I'm not sure we're going to get to the point that the state might ideally like to have, which is, you know, we've accomplished all of these OER textbook adoptions, but if we could show that, you know, there's this much more awareness being developed because you can't get faculty to adopt something that they don't even haven't even heard of.
I just want to add something to the discussion. I think we should be clear about our objective, what we're doing at this time. We've seen the national survey, and UConn is ahead of every other person, you know, in this. I think we should separate the UConn efforts from our task in hand. And then just start from the beginning, because most of the institutions, especially at the community college level, they are not even aware of OER. Or if they are, they don't know that they are using resources. I will say that instead of trying to do a survey that will match the national trends, let's first of all do some kind of an exploratory study. Find out what is going on, you know, in Connecticut institutions. Either putting together a supplementary, putting together supplementary questions to the Babson one, the adapted one, or a separate survey altogether, trying to find out what people are aware of and what they are not. What are they doing? If we put it in a survey form, our own local survey, with all these questions, some of these, put it in a survey form, we'll be able to capture more data than doing an inventory. At least to make people aware of what is being done, what we are talking about, what is OER, for those who don't know what it is. Then the next phase will be doing this. You sent this link to us, the inventory. I sent it to some faculty members. They were saying, what is this? What is OER? You know, they don't even know the background of what we are talking about, and then we are trying to collect this, you know, the data. So it's like putting the cart in front of the horse.
So I would say that if every institution maybe should put a survey in its own context, but if the 20 or so questions that we're asking that are adopted from the Babson survey also explain at each point in time what OER is. It defines it. It asks a question about your awareness. So I actually think that's a good start for raising awareness and finding out where people are, what they're using. And maybe following up later because about the very specific titles and or specifics. What I believe one of our primary objectives here is to get a baseline information across the state about who knows what, you know, to raise awareness, to tell them what it is, to ask them questions about their use or their potential use. And it can be, you know, if you needed to put a couple of cover pages that explained it, that for your own institution or each one, that would be different. But and then at some point after we've done some interventions, some workshops, some, you know, done some additional work to do the survey again, to find out whether awareness has been raised, whether resources have been used. Is that?
Well, I'll just make one clarification. Within the context of the Northeast OER Consortium, I don't think the intent was ever to take the collection vehicle and distribute it to faculty direct. We were always counting on, as Tanya said, sort of a local champion to be the data collection and somewhat vetting and support. So it wasn't that it would go out to a blanket-wide faculty and you'd have the surprise look of, what is this? That it was somebody who was in the know on the campus saying, I know of these innovative faculty who are doing this. I'm going to collect the data for them so that we have at least a baseline. So I guess that was the original intent, at least within the consortium piece. It was never intended to go out to everybody's mailbox.
Yeah, so we're really talking about two very different collection tools for two very different, going to different audiences for different purposes. And
I understand what you're saying, Clara, because when I sent out my, you know, just general question, you know, are you using OER, this is what it is, and I got a handful of answers, that in and of itself was useful. I mean, just knowing that, you know, some people were doing something, some people didn't know that what they were doing was the thing I was describing. And I think this Babson survey, the first few questions are just asking demographic stuff and about who does the selecting. And I think it's when you get to that question about how aware of you are you of OER, where it describes it,
right.
You know, that's kind of an awareness issue. And I don't think we're going to get from all of the institutions by any means a kind of inventory of all of this data, but the more data we can get, the better. So I think, you know, it doesn't have to be just this survey. It could be that, you know, you send out something and then you follow it up with this survey if you feel it's going to be useful. I don't think it's going to be a mandatory survey in any way.
So, I mean, I go back to this question 12, the one, you know, open educational resources is defined as teaching, learning, and research resources that reside in the public domain or have been released under an intellectual property license that permits their free use, repurposing others. Unlike traditionally copyrighted material, these resources are available for open use, which means they can be edited, modified, customized, share. How aware are you? So then that's really what we're trying to get. I'm not aware. I've not heard of it. I have heard of it, but don't know much. I'm somewhat aware. I am aware and use it. And then we ask, you know, some follow-up questions along that line. And that, I think that's, you know, partly our objective here is to just to find out where we are as a state. James, we've been spending the past hour sort of discussing these survey tools and talking with the folks who have used them in North Dakota. I don't know if you had a chance to look, but we really value your input on their usefulness, whether you think faculty would, or if you don't have time today, if you could follow up with us before we...
I have not had much time to follow up as my newborn was in the hospital for a couple of weeks, so he's fine now. But he caught like every virus imaginable in his daycare within 5 days, and I was not doing much reading. No, except about viruses. And I teach English, so it wasn't really even helpful for work. But I think sending out the survey would be good. But I walked in late, obviously. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but Clara was talking a little bit about trying to separate what the community colleges and state use do from UConn, and did we decide that's not what to do? Because I do think she has a good idea there.
I guess I just want to make one. Although they're not represented, the independent colleges are part of this task force as well.
Oh, I see.
So I guess that's just a quick reminder. It's not necessarily an answer to your question.
Well, but we did agree to amend the survey to include a question about community colleges, you know, so a demographic question so that we could determine whether there's any difference between awareness at a community college or use or, you know, any other needs. So what we're concerned about is, you know, getting a baseline that's includes Connecticut, but I think the survey itself could separate it out, and we could say community colleges are at this level, University of Connecticut, who hasn't, we're ahead, but you know, we're not that far ahead. We've only been doing this for about a year, and there's still a lot that we have to learn.
The only thing that worries me about getting participation is there's certainly a little bit of fatigue with new initiatives over the past few years, and not just necessarily like fatigue, but I think even people are just getting a little blinded to stuff at this point between P1240 and Transform and everything else. And I know the new president, you know, is trying to have a clean slate, and it's very supported, but it still doesn't necessarily take away this kind of like, oh, here we go again. So what are we trying to get out of this survey? Because I think we're going to find people who use these resources and people who don't, and people who, a couple of people I talked to in the English department who use the Purdue OWL instead of a handbook, and they're encountering exactly the same problems that they had with the handbook. I mean, the students just don't go there. They just don't go to the website. They don't open it up. They're giving quizzes on what they should be looking at with the Purdue OWL. So the effect seemed to be it just hasn't changed much of anything, except it's cheaper for the students, but they're still not using it. I'm guessing that in other disciplines it would be somewhat different with some of these resources.
There's a wide variety of differences among the disciplines, and I think we talked about we may learn that we need to focus on, you know, the high enrollment, high cost resources as opposed to those that are less expensive, and faculty are already cobbling together inexpensive resources. So partly it was awareness so that we could go back after we've done some interventions and see if there's better awareness, and then also it's a, you know, differentiating between the different kinds of schools and differentiating among the disciplines so we could figure out where our focus should be as a state.
Yeah, I think generally, I mean, where I am in humanities, I think we're going to find a lot of Luddites, for better or worse. I think sometimes, too, we, you know, may have an issue with the fact that there's been a lot of freezes, so we don't have a lot of young faculty. I'm going on 42, and I'm the youngest person in my department by 15 years. So we may have some issues there, which is not to say that people who are older don't use technology. My mother, who's 72, taught me how to text. but we may find that type of issue as well, that, you know, it's a very gray culture we have at the community colleges and state use.
Yeah, we don't ask them their age, but we do ask them how
they you have some excellent points. So I think one of the pieces that we talked about before is that we were going to identify what institution, or at least that was one of the suggestions from our guest speaker, was that we would identify who the survey participant was and what institution, so that we could then break down 2-year, 4-year public and private from that self-identification piece. I think you're absolutely right. If you look at the national trend, humanities is the least adopted disciplines just because of difference of opinions or what have you. It seems that STEM, specifically math, is more because, not to be flippant, but you know, how much has math changed in 2,000 years? So there's also more supporting resources that seems to be the choke point for a lot of students coming into as freshmen. You know, the PA 1240s, you know, rumination around math. I know it's writing as well, but
And we did adopt a computer program for a large chunk of our coursework in that to deal with that legislation. But your typical humanities person is in a library, you know, surrounded by books, and you know they may use the computer for a number of different things, but sometimes they're for whatever reason a little late to adopt them in the classroom.
Yeah, I mean, I find it. So I was an English major. saying that right, and I've spoken to some folks in the humanities who the resources tend to be, you know, less expensive in any case in general, and I think raising some of the awareness of some of the older materials that are already in the public domain or that can be found through the Google Books project, or so there may be some ways, you know, some small ways that we can identify. You don't really, there may be a, you know, a particular novel that you want everyone to read and you love them to read the same edition so that you can refer to a certain page, but you know, maybe if everybody were to get the free version, that would help a bit, or help those who were never going to buy it.
I think people are open to that, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think one of the things that was interesting at Eastern when we, you know, invited people that were using OER, even though they didn't necessarily know that's what they were called, is we did have an English faculty member who was using books in the public domain. And, you know, I hadn't even really thought about that in a way. I should have. But, you know, I keep thinking about, you know, the accounting textbook or the chemistry textbook. But she was saving her students a lot of money. But I think the other issue is that I don't think in some of the humanities there's a textbook the way there is a biology textbook.
No.
And the library is more likely to have some of these books in the collection and put them on reserve, whereas the library won't buy the chemistry textbook. So they have different issues, but in a way, doing this survey might surface some of that. You know?
I agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. And that awareness, I think, can only help. Definitely.
And I think our speaker earlier said that in their survey they found that faculty over 50 were more likely to adopt.
Probably.
Sort of interesting.
Yeah, I may have been referencing myself when I said a bit of a Luddite. Yeah.
So, we'll incorporate any suggestions. If you have a chance to look at the survey and want to send them to us, we'll send a reminder out to the members who couldn't come. We've already had some suggestions on that Babson survey, and come up with another version. I think we'll hold off on the OER inventory for now and bring that back around. And you're going to circle back with Tanya at North Dakota. We are doing it in Qualtrics, so, and we could do, I think, you know, between Kevin and I, we'll figure out how to get something that will go out for the state. But my sense would be it would go out, you know, to each institution individually. But we have to. I don't know the logistics. That and or the time of year may matter. This could be something we really can't do until the fall, or we won't get faculty to respond. So I think it's going to take us a little time, and we're a bit late in starting. So we'll be talking with Representative Haddad about maybe extending some of our time. What else would people like to hear about? We thought we would open the floor to, you know, there are other guest speakers, other presenters. Did you find it valuable listening to Tanya? Do you want to bring someone in? We do have some folks locally who are leaders. We could probably get more national folks on the phone. What topics or do you think would help us keep stay educated?
I can offer suggestions just to spark the conversation. You know, if it's helpful to talk to folks like Tanya, who represent a statewide or system-wide effort that we're trying to do, Jerry Hanley is from Cal State, the Cal State system, and he's been willing to talk to us virtually. The interesting aspect about Cal State is that they have two or three national initiatives. One is MERLOT, which is a national repository of OER materials. What's interesting about that particular repository is that they actually pay faculty nationally to do peer review against the rubric. So it's a nice vetted machine. Another initiative that Jerry's team has put together is the Affordable Learning Solution. It's a platform, and based on our conversation we had back in February, where we were talking about having some kind of Connecticut-branded vetted collection, that's exactly what this platform does. It allows for folks to do specific reviews, Connecticut faculty to do reviews, and select those pieces of material that they've vetted and selected into this more refined repository versus going through the national repositories. And they also have some other initiatives like Cool for Ed. So Jerry could talk from a state perspective of what type of legislation was passed in California, how Cal State responded to that, and then the different platforms that they've developed to support OER efforts across the country.
I like that idea, and I like the idea of possibly having some outcome, if it's feasible, of continuing our work with Connecticut OER, review task force or something. So there'd be somebody from UConn and, somebody from Gateway and somebody from, I can't remember, Gateway. Have some Connecticut faculty and some from the privates who could perhaps help to create this, locally vetted repository. Because when I heard that the UConn faculty were going to adopt this particular chemistry textbook, I thought, now maybe the Eastern faculty might be interested because they know UConn, and they know that if UConn says this is a good textbook, it's not like Professor Jones from Indiana that we don't know what his standards are. So I'm wondering if that would enable us to get a core group of textbooks that people would say, oh, yeah, these are good.
So I think I agree, that's a great topic. The other thing is I wonder if, I'm sorry there aren't some other folks here, I think that maybe half of us are very, very sensitized to the notion of the high cost, to what the national studies have been, but Connecticut PIRG has done a huge amount of work. They've just published a new version of Covering the Cost, and of course they've worked with U.S. Public interest groups. So I wonder if we're all comfortable enough that it's important and how much it's important to students, or do we want to talk, hear somebody from, the state group or not?
I think people do want to hear. Okay. Yeah, definitely. And in terms of the cost, I was thinking now, we mentioned last time discussions about bookstore and contracts and things like that. I know that there are some faculty who have wanted to go a different route than the bookstore, and it was implied that they could not. Is there any way that we can get some clarification on this in terms of implications here of going away from the bookstores?
I think definitely, and I think that Connecticut PIRG. So it's not, like having U.S. PIRG here. It's Connecticut. They've really looked at this thing, and we have at University of Connecticut just gone through an RFP process for a new bookstore, and one of the key elements was to be sure that in the offerings that they were putting forth in the to faculty was that open educational resources had to be among them. And I saw software that did include that, as well as we know that students, you know, will often find the materials they want on Amazon or other places. So many of these vendors, as they were doing their presentation, showed how they work closely with off peer-to-peer sellers or off markets. I mean, they already knew they had to incorporate that into their model. So, I don't know if that answers your question about have to use the bookstore, but you know,
is that a collective bargaining issue for places that have collective bargaining? In other words, I mean, at Eastern, I don't think the AAUP faculty would tolerate being told they had to use something from Eastern's bookstore. But, you know, likewise, there's nothing, I'm sure, that requires our bookstore to display OpenStax textbooks in their space.
No,
yeah.
I guess the only comment I can make, at least on the community college bookstore contract, because that's going out to RFP, and they were evaluating not only UConn's RFP, but they were also looking at an RFP out of Virginia that was specifically designed to have open elements into it. So as they go out to bid, they're going to make sure whoever responds to that is going to have built-in provisions. So, but beyond that, OpenStax, and Nicole Finkbinder is probably the person that we'd want to talk to. OpenStax has arrangements with bookstores like Follett and MBS where they can actually do fulfillment inside the bookstore so students can use their financial aid directly. But the bookstore will actually have printed hardbound copies of the OpenStax textbook there at whatever the list price is. So they're not going to be gouged.
So here's an example. You've probably seen this. So,
I just bought one from OpenStax College, Concepts of Biology. It's free. Student can free, the faculty member can do whatever they want to remix it, reformat it. But if a student wants to buy this is less than $50. Hard copy. The paperbacks are usually around $20, $25. Yeah. So it's either free, a soft cover, you know, in the $20, $25. So what has happened at our bookstore in the past is they have provided copies of, you know, of the print because not every student wants, and they're affordable. So those arrangements are being made, and which then brings up another maybe OpenStax, maybe Nicole Finkbinder, who's the marketing and public relations person from OpenStax, who has an extremely reputable set of authoritative textbooks, could speak to us too about the process, how they select authors, how they get their funding, and how they track usage.
I'd like to also, though, at some point, maybe, I don't know if it's even out there or if there's a school that does it, but a school similar to a Gateway or a Housatonic that's adopted this and were there access issues with the technology? One of the things that we looked at with PA 1240 was a school that was demographically similar to Gateway in New Haven, and we found ALP in Baltimore, and we've had very similar results. And I'm just curious if there's a way we can find a school that would be similar.
The students who don't have access to the technology.
Which is significant. I mean, I have to tell my students that they're not allowed to write their papers on their phones and then try to send them to an email in the school. And
we can definitely do a comparison. I mean, just within Massachusetts, I'm aware of three or four different community colleges that have, I don't want to say robust, but fairly active OER efforts. Northern Essex Community College is probably the largest, and then North Shore Community College, Bristol Community College. So there is an effort. I would need to find out what would be comparable to Gateway to make that comparison.
Well, yeah, just because there's a tremendous difference between Gateway and Northwestern, for example.
Even Gateway and Middlesex.
Yeah, it's completely different.
Yeah. So have you ever done sort of a technology surveys to, you know, I mean, maybe that would be more useful in some ways to find out what access to technology your students have.
We have internal.
That would actually be excellent data to look at, just in terms of, you know.
Most of our students are not computer literate. They don't even have laptops.
Right.
So
they would be good candidates for an inexpensive book like this. That is open on the market if they do have access, but also very cheap. Very affordable. Because our mantra here is affordable.
And not that we want to do this as probably maybe a next step, but because we did talk about alternate methods to open, because we're focused on affordable, is that there are sort of next generation publishers. They're doing low-cost solutions. Now, they may be digital, they may be hardbound, but we mentioned at one point in time a publisher by the name of XYZ Books, so or Sumo Learning, which are a fraction of what the big three are producing. So it's not open in the sense that it's a open license or that it's free, but it's severely reduced comparative to what the major publishers are doing.
I guess it's just that I was concerned about the effect it has on students that don't have access to this technology at home. I mean, they've got all the technology they could want at Gateway, but they've got to come to the building.
Mm-hmm.
If they're taking an online course at home, or if they're doing online work at home, sometimes.
But I wonder if they're likely not to buy the textbook either, if they're if that's an economic issue.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah.
I think it would be more of an issue if it was only available online, and maybe that's something, you know, that we need to be aware of, is that a solution like this is not exclusively an online solution. It's a more affordable solution with various options.
But do these schools you mentioned in Massachusetts have a similar demographics? Okay.
Well, I think we have a lot of ideas. I do want to call to your attention the this is double-sided. I think you have one. The April 19th affordable textbook. It starts with us. Symposium. I will be issuing to all members of this task force a. An invitation to register. We do need registration so we can keep track of numbers and we're feeding you. Our students, once again, our students are paying for this. Two student committees got together and are each putting in $300. And David Wiley, who's chief academic officer of Lumen Learning, is, you know, well, you know, he's... He has quite a national reputation. I mean, excellent speaker, and our we have a nice panel put together. If you can come to any of it, that would be great. Dr. Wiley will be doing sort of a wrap up at the end. So it's really 10 to 2:30. The most of the day, but if you can come to any of it, please do, and please register. I think that there's a lot to be learned here, and
To what extent is this open, given that your students are paying for it?
Okay, so what we're going to do is open it first. So I'll send an invitation to this group. It'll be open first to the faculty. The market is really not to the students at UConn. The market, you know, they understand is to their faculty. Very short, and it's only in 2 weeks, so the first round of invitations will go out to the faculty, and then we will open it up to the rest of the state.
Okay, so,
From
Eastern's point of view, it's nearby.
Yes, so it would be wonderful if there's room, and I suspect there will be, but we just wanted to make sure that the faculty weren't shut out from the meeting, right? We also talked about putting together a website. I brought to your attention through the, no, Kevin did, through the agenda, the guide that has been developed at UConn, but we're trying to get a URL. It will just be open.ucon.edu. I don't think we can get anything that's statewide, but that one, if we get it, we could use it, but I would like that to be devised by this group or by a subcommittee of this group who would take, this rather an overwhelming amount of resources on the one that we have for the class guide, and then we would want to put, I would think Kevin mentioned, minutes of this meeting, other resources that we gather, so we'll be soliciting subcommittee members to pull together a website for the state. Does that sound like a...
Is your guide a LibGuide?
Yeah.
And are you making it OER in and of itself?
Oh, of course it is. Yeah. It's linkable and do whatever you want with it. Yes. You can just give us attribution. But you may, we used many other people's, and I think that many elements of it will go into a website, which might have it has a different market than these class guides. Yeah.
So just to give credit, Marianne's been very kind about setting out doodle polls and trying to determine when we can meet, and Martha and I both understand how challenging it is, and that just by attendance here, it was difficult for folks to get here outside of traffic and what have you. We did, or Marianne did send something out to get sort of a pulse on which days of the week would be best, and at last peak, it looked like Mondays and Fridays were the best for all of the committee, and potentially Monday mornings and Friday mornings. I guess beyond that question, if those two days of the week are the best, as we're getting near to the end of the semester, we're looking to schedule something in May, but as we want to do forward progress through the summer, what is everybody's availability during the summer months, and do we have the potential to do more meetings if necessary?
Depends on when they're scheduled.
I'm taking a vacation.
Me too.
Yeah, my availability opens up quite a bit, except for Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays in July. I have a summer class in the morning, standing around.
So Mondays and Fridays still work?
Mondays and Fridays still work, yes. But in June or August, I've got more availability, yeah.
Can we do some of the meetings by teleconference? For everybody.
What about video conference?
Oh, video.
Or maybe we should pick a site where we have.
Maybe there are sites where we could do some good
WebEx
or do something like that because
I don't know if we have to keep this public. Like, I don't know
So
this is accessible to the public here, and I'm not sure if we had a video conference or teleconference like that, if the accessibility to the I'm not sure of what the regulations are. Sorry, I'm not usually a clerk, but I could find that out.
So I understand that if we have this after May 4th, then... Representative Haddad will be with us, and perhaps at that time we can chat a little bit about whether to extend our time frame and go over some of the objectives. And
because this task force is formed legislatively, I'm not sure if any amendments to your time frame need to be changed legislatively as well. I
we could ask that question, but I think before May 4th, because if it needs to be done before May 4th, then because that's the end of our session. And so if we were to do any amendments to prior legislation, it would have to be done during a regular session, and not we would never come in for a special session for that.
No, never.
No. Although we may be here all summer, given the budget.
If we can determine if there is a public requirement, and if there is, so I guess the follow-up question is that the sister organization that I represent is Charter Oak State College, which is in New Britain, which is about 10, 15 minutes down the road, so still centrally located, and as public institutions are, it is open to the public, so we could facilitate the meeting in a large conference room that does have video conferencing enabled in there, so that is an alternative.
That might be possible. We sometimes have committee meetings off-site, but they're usually in public or municipal, I mean, usually municipal or other state institutions around the state.
So if a public institution of higher ed counts, then maybe that would work.
I think that might work, but I'm not sure if we were all video conferencing each other what the rules are about that.
We need better rules about that.
We may just not have gotten to that piece of technology.
Right, exactly.
As I'm holding the phone.
So one of the conversation topics was about when the next meeting was going to be and whether it should be after May 4th if the session does end on time. And then having that, I guess, juxtaposed to when finals are and when folks might be available for their institutions. So I don't know what the thoughts on that are as far as when finals are for either the state universities or the community colleges or even the privates for that matter.
Offhand, I don't know. I have to look at the top of my desk. My office, where my calendar is, I have it written down. I have to flip forward a month, but if need be, I can certainly try to come in.
Well, we don't want to impact students. So that's the last thing. We want to impact them positively, not negatively. So that's.
Yeah, well, my schedule's fairly flexible, so.
Yeah, I'm flexible.
I would just appreciate notice like we've been getting, though, just because if I have to, move my kids around, the child care and all the rest of it, sometimes it can get complicated. But if we have notice like we've been getting, I can probably arrange it.
Okay. I think that's the intent.
Yeah. Okay, so we have the, best days of the week and times, but we're going to have to now get down to, as soon as possible, probably, defining our May meeting. Yeah. Thank you, Mary. Mm-hmm.
We're right about at 3 o'clock. Is there anything else for the cause for today? All right. With that, do we have a motion to adjourn?
A second.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
I know.